Richard Williams joins us on Sports Byline. He, of course, is the father and coach of Venus and Serena Williams, and the sisters have won 15 Wimbledon titles, more Olympic gold medals than any other women in tennis, and each been repeatedly named number one player in the world, and he has written a fascinating book called Black and White, The Way I See It. You know, I found this book very interesting, Richard, because I always wonder why people are the way they are. And it was evident to me that the way you grew up, the challenges that you had growing up, really turned you into what you are today. Am I correct in that observation?
Yes, you're correct, but I'd like to add just a tiny bit to it, which is most important. My mom is the main reason I'm the way that I am today.
I was going to say your mom, because in the book you talk about about what it was like when you were born. Pick up the story from there, Richard.
Well, actually, my mom was pregnant, and she was trying to get me to the hospital, and I was in her stomach on a cold, rainy night. She had to hook up the mule and the wagon. I had no father in the home. The mule broke his leg on his way to the hospital, so there she was standing out in the rain trying to hope she could get a ride. And finally, one lady came by, but my mom couldn't ride with her because the Negroes wasn't at that time of the year or that time in life able to ride with white people unless you were going to work. Another old black man came by and he helped to get to the hospital, and that's how I came into the world. And going into a few years later, about 5 years, 10 months, I ended up getting a beating by a couple of white people, because during those times you couldn't put a dollar in a white man's hand or a white lady's hand, but put it on the counter. And I was going to challenge to put it in the hand and got a good beating. And that's my dad first ran off and left me. You know, Ron, what's interesting about my mom was that whatever problem you took to her, she solved the problem for you, made you solve it herself. For instance, I remember going to about Dr. Carter. He was a white doctor. And I thought he was prejudiced from the things he had done to me. But when I told my mom about it, she said, well, I'm prejudiced too. You don't have anything. You the people don't have nothing. They might be prejudiced against you. But I am too. And she went and talked to Dr. Carter, and she shared with him that, as you know, I don't have a husband, and the two of us got the racist boy. And boy, did that doctor and my wife do a great job in raising me. So with my mom, the reason during those days, I've seen a lot of people came along, but my mom was unbelievable.
There was another incident that really, I think, molded you as well, and it happened at the age of 16. Three of your closest friends died at the hands of white people at that particular time. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, actually, you know, I've been fortunate all my life to see things like that happen. What it does is hurt you deeply. It leaves a scar inside of you with your heart and your head as well as your feet. Because at my age, 72, you know, I've been so scared. I used to think I can run just as fast as I did 16. So, but you couldn't get my mom to see that they was prejudiced because it happened. Mom taught me that if I want to entertain prejudice, I would lose half of the world and more. So you couldn't go to her talking about, well, he killed this guy and that guy and that guy. You yet alive, you can't be prejudiced. You have to do the best you can and make people love you. And that's one of the main reasons I'm not prejudiced, all because of my mom, because the life I came up with, it supported prejudice.
You're candid about the fact that you stole from whites and you sold your spoils to provide for the family. But you tell a story that had me laughing about the time you stole the white farmer's Ku Klux Klan robes.
Actually, what it was is he had a daughter, and his daughter got the Ku Klux Klan robe out of the shed, if you want to call it a horse barn, because we used for both things there. And that's how I really got the white robe that they would wear. And when I put it on, it fitted so well, and it actually looked like it was supposed to fit me. And I wore that thing. But after wearing it for a few times and trying it out, I decided I'm going to put that robe myself into action. So I got some makeup on and put my hands where they hopefully would look like white people's hands, and behind the eyes and so on. So you go out there at night, and that gentleman that I jumped on that night and his son, they actually both were drunk. So I went out there to insult them, but on my way there, they had picked up a black boy. And when they would pick up a black boy during those days, and you have two or three people riding in the back of the truck, or killing was going to take place. So while I was out there, I raised a little hell by shooting a gun and scared them, and I couldn't get the black guy to halfway run, so I shared with him, if you don't run, they're going to kill you, so I'll kill you first. And he finally took off, and I had to grab the bicycle out that was riding and take off, and I rode as if the devil was behind me until I got home. But I was so scared that someone would come by and set the house on fire, but no one recognized me, so that's how I got through that one.
You moved, of course, to Chicago, and then from Chicago, you started a new beginning in California. You know, that was kind of a strong statement to make. I mean, here is a kid that comes out of the South, and yet you moved to Chicago and then on to California, and you taught yourself to play tennis. Now, what was it about tennis that drew you? Because when you were growing up, Richard, that was not anything but a white man's sport, a white person's sport, and it was a country club sport.
Well, that's so true, Ron. There was no tennis court in my neighborhood whatsoever. But what really got me involved, Ron, was in tennis with that. Not that I like tennis, Dan. It just so happened I saw a girl, I didn't know her name then, and she won a tennis match, and Bud Collins was the announcer. And I really didn't see the match. What happened, I was seeing the interview, and he said, $40,000, that's a good check. He said, it's not bad for 4 days. And I was thinking, well, no one could do that. That's impossible. And I thought, if that's true, I'm going to have two kids and put them in tennis. And in the process of wanting two kids, I got carried away writing all kind of plans and so on and thinking that, oh, my kid's going to be number one. So I talked about them being number one in tennis about 2 years before they was ever born. Even before they was even conceded to the mom.
What were the early challenges for you as far as playing tennis, both personally as well as for the girls when you had the girls?
I would say for me, I don't think no one liked me when I was playing tennis. Because I read the tennis book for instruction. I got video instruction tape. And I did not agree with anything that I read. I couldn't figure how would I be facing east and hitting the ball west. How could I face east and hit north? It did not make sense where the body should be lined up. So I created what was called an open stand. Up until then, there was no such thing as an open stand in tennis. And so that's what I created. And that was the biggest problem for me learning because everyone would laugh and because they could beat me. And finally, I learned how to play. I was pretty good. The biggest thing, I think, for Venus and Serena was, I can't say, I can only tell you some of the things I've seen. And some of the things I've seen was, I think a lot of people didn't like Venus and Serena beating them as much. I remember being at a tennis tournament, and I read an article not long ago about what Martina Hingis said about how she felt about tennis, and someone, you know, had her. And when you're out there and you're an American and you have Americans pulling against you and trying to put the kids in the other country, it makes you feel like the time when I came along. And I never wanted my girls to feel that way. That was the biggest challenge, I would say. The second biggest challenge for me, not the first one.
Yeah, you talk about when the girls were young and you were trying to train them in Compton, California. I love this quote from you. Some guy raised up out of a sunroof and started firing at someone else, catching us in the middle. In that type of environment, what were the girls like and how coachable were they, having to look over their shoulder almost in a sense?
Well, you know, he was, I'm not sure, but I think there was a Chevrolet he was in, but I'm not sure of that. But he raised up out of the sunroof and started shooting directly at the tennis court to wire. They wanted to know why is you want to be white. And they were used to end with why you end want to be white. And it was something like, I guess, when I grew up. But it didn't bother us because I had trained them how to get out of shooting and how to get on their knees and start crawling. But don't look for me out here with them because I'd be going myself. And so I thought that was pretty rough on them. And that part of getting shot at, that wasn't as bad as going through the tennis court on the tennis court. Well, the gang members would have guns and selling drugs. And on the tennis court, it was always broken balls just to try to clean up and get this where they could play tennis. And that's what made it very rough. Also what made it rough, I felt, was when we started playing tennis there, hardly ever seen any little child playing at the park because of the gangs and was shooting people. And during that time when we was there, Compton where we came up there in the tennis club. That's the worst neighborhood, I think, in America. Everyone was getting killed there. So it made it very rough. But it didn't deter them from playing tennis because I moved to the ghetto because I thought the real ghetto offered three major qualities. And those qualities, Ron, was to make you rough, to make you tough, and you definitely have to be strong. Another thing about living in the ghetto, you had to understand what your responsibility was if you want to see the next day. And that's what I appreciated about the ghetto more than anything.
I found your quote about Venus and Serena, the quote being, "From the beginning, I decided that if people came to me later on and told me my daughters were great tennis players, I had failed." What was the message you were trying to send there?
I was trying to send to people that I felt that I thought that a lot of people in professional tennis did not understand. Being from the ghetto, you kind of learn a lot. My mom had taught me a lot. My mom taught me that UCLA, which is in Westwood, California, is not family. And I thought that UCLA was so great, just I wanted to go to school at. And she said that my mom taught me that family is the oldest human institution in the world. And so I had to learn that and teach it to my kids. And in the process around teaching that episode, it was important that they become the best tennis player, the best person in the world. But I wanted them to be great people more so than tennis player. Why? Because people, if you're a good role model, you can have so many kids there in Compton and watch where we was. As you probably know, in 65, we had a major ride in Watts where tons of people got killed in the army had to come in. So that's why it was so important to me that if anyone came to me and said, "Now, if your girl's a great tennis player," and they ended there, I would be upset with my kids because they're supposed to represent the home. And the home was they were great girls and came from a terrific family.
I want to get your perspective in your own words about Indian Wells and the problems down there. And you've been quoted as saying it's the worst act of prejudice I've seen since they killed Martin Luther King. Put that into perspective for me, Richard.
You know, Ron, I'm telling you, there was no need for those people at Indian Wells to be that way. And during our survey when I went back to Indian Wells, that's a very well-educated neighborhood. So it's no need for them to be that way. A piece of land just enough to park my motorhome on at that time was $1 million. So how could they be that way? 15,300 people booing Venus, booing myself when we walked in. And we didn't know they was booing Serena out on the court. At that time, when you have kids, at any time you have kids, especially me, you don't want no one picking on your kids. You're ready for them to pick on you. And I tell you something, if I had me a stick, I think I'd have went to jail because I would have went up and I had a lot of heads. And being called names as I walked down, it was uncalled for. You don't treat people that way. When you have that type of income like those people have, you don't do that. So there are people out there have $7 million singular in their patios. So why would you treat us so badly? And I guess they didn't understand the people was that Venus had reported to the WTA earlier that morning she was hurt and couldn't play. And they only announced it when it was time for them, for Venus to play, well, she can't play. So it might not have been the WTA fault or the fans fault, but someone has to take responsibility. And I blame whole Indian Wells for it. It was wrong.
We only have 30 seconds left, Richard, but what do you want people to take away from this book? What do you want them to know about Richard Williams that maybe they didn't know before?
And I'm a good-hearted person. I have no prejudice. I never had. My mom wouldn't allow that. And I've helped a lot of kids that white, black, and other kids, as well as grown-ups in this world, and helped a bunch of people. I hope that when people see this book and read it, that they will understand that they could have been wrong about me, because I think that I'm a great person, and there's no prejudice about me at all.
Richard, I want to thank you very, very much. You know you're welcome here anytime. I like this book, and I hope people will check it out. It's called Black and White, The Way I See It. Again, the father and coach of Venus and Serena Williams, Richard Williams. Richard, take care.
Thank you, Ron. Bye-bye.
One of the things about Richard Williams is that he's been true to himself. He was honest in this book about the things he did when he was young and how he did them, but he also explained why he did them. So I hope you'll check it out, Black and White, The Way I See It. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show.